Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Photographer Quentin Lake set himself a daunting challenge to walk and photograph the coastline of Great Britain. It's turning into an 8-year project, and he's now editing hundreds of photographs he's taken on his coastal walks around what he's aptly called the perimeter. I catch up with him on a bright and breezy day along the Cotswold Way, a favourite local walk of his. Although he's spent 5 years solitarily walking, which he describes as loneliness, he's great company, and he tells me about why walking and photography are so integral to his life, and how there's a kind of creative magic in walking more and photographing less. Did you have that panic while you were on the perimeter, that you were taking photographs and the kit wouldn't work?
Yeah, all the time. You kind of, so sometimes the battery contact wouldn't work and the screen would be blank, and I'd think, oh no, it hasn't worked for a week, and then I'd just have to wiggle it around and it would work again. But I was pretty obsessed with carrying battery power, so I always carried about 5 days worth of power so that I could be self-sufficient for that time, which for me is a really sort of freeing feeling.
How did you walk?
6,985 miles. That's by the map, so I think by pace counting it's about 10-20% more than that, and that was over 454 days, and that was walked over 5 years, where I'd walk in sections of between 2 weeks and 2 months. I wild camp most of the time, and I have porridge every morning for breakfast, because it's kind of warming and light to carry.
Did you fall into a routine, or did you...
Yes, yeah.
Did you allow serendipity to take over?
That's interesting. A bit of both. So I averaged about 25 kilometres a day, which allowed an average of 3 hours of photography per day. But if something really extraordinarily beautiful or interesting happened, I would let the photography lead me, so I might only walk a few kilometres on that day. But then I'd have to catch up the time when it was either dark or the following day. So I was, over a period of maybe 2 or 3 days, I was very disciplined. I'd always cover an average of 75 kilometres in 3 days, but that would kind of accordion in and out, depending on how interesting the scenery was and what the weather was like.
So we're now walking along here. What are we going at the sort of pace you walk, or are we going much slower?
Again, it varied. Sometimes, if the weather was bad and there weren't any photographic opportunities and I was cold and tired, I would walk quickly. But if there was lots of dynamic changes in the light and the landscape, I mean, this experience generally makes me, I find, walking too fast now. Then people at the beginning of the journey would say, sure, that's so slow, don't you want to cycle? And it's the, for me, it's the opposite now. It's the speed of the parallax of objects in the landscape when they move when you walk. Non-photographers are often surprised that you can only move the camera a couple of inches, and it makes a radically different change to the image. The speed of walking means you can just see an arrangement of things in the landscape and go, wow, that's beautiful, and then you stop and take the picture.
Now, you did some crafty things too. You sort of took you had a drone, and I mean, you're a pro photographer, so you knew that, you knew how to handle your camera.
Yeah, I've been a photographer 25 years. At the beginning, I carried about 12 kilograms of stuff, of which 5 kilograms was the camera. And then when I got to Scotland, it was a totally different kind of... It was an expedition, really, and it was more like 25 kilograms, but the same amount of camera gear. As I got sort of to know my body better, I could figure out I could carry more weight. And then I carried a drone at the end for the last few thousand kilometres, yeah.
He throws in.
Yeah.
Photographs and the drone footage and things like that, I mean, it's just incredible. Absolutely incredible. So not only is, you know, can we marvel at the coastal countryside, if we dare to call it that,
yeah,
of Britain, but obviously we take our hat off to you, because you... you know, you've created this incredible... Well, you, honestly, I think you said...
Well, it's kind of you to say, but I always... I don't it's kind of out there. I don't think, you know, I don't think I've made it, or it's just sort of observing or maybe reminding people that these amazing things are on our doorstep. I mean, the journey for me is that I'd always gone to kind of exotic places to look for inspiration as a photographer. So I'd been on 3 trips to the Arctic. I'd sort of crossed some deserts in the jungles of Peru, these kind of classic adventures where, for me, when I was in those, I liked feeling like a foreigner, like I didn't understand anything, because that meant that I could see the world through fresh eyes. That wasn't really a very honest way of being, because ever since I was a child, I would do these long walks with my parents and then ultimately by myself every time I could. And then, but it actually took me till I was sort of 25 to marry these two things together and start producing photography with walking together. And then the kind of real magic happened, because I felt one was enabling the other, and I was really fulfilled by it.
Now we're walking. Is this Cotswold Way?
This is the Cotswold Way, yeah. This is my favourite local walk, very well-worn for me during lockdown. But actually this, where we're going, Bella's Napa, there's something just magical about it, because it's this sort of gentle, sort of pregnant bulge in the landscape, and you have this view all around the Cotswold Escarpment. It's just a really magical place.
Your professional career has been very much about architecture, landscape and travel.
That's right, yes. So I do commercial architectural photography, which was originally how I earned a living, and then increasingly I'm earning a living as a fine art photographer, I guess, where I'm selling prints of my landscape images, which are a geometrical abstract side rather than a documentary side.
Yeah, no, I think this is fascinating, because I actually interviewed someone called Nick Cowan many years ago.
Oh, yeah?
And he was a rights-of-way officer in Wiltshire. He's now retired.
Okay.
But he started off as a photographer.
Really?
And,
yeah.
And trained as a photographer. And, you know, he was enjoying it a lot, but he really just actually enjoyed being out and about.
Yes, yeah.
And got the sort of dream job for him.
Yes, yeah.
Of being a rights-of-way officer, yeah, in southern Wiltshire. It was kind of strange, the way he approached what walks he was going to do.
Yes.
Was almost because he was a photographer.
Really? Okay.
And also, in a strange way, because it was his day job.
Yes.
Yeah. He wanted to find a distraction from doing the day job, so he would look out for the for the photography.
Yeah.
Your day job is photography.
Yes.
So tell us, what is it about walking, or what is it about Quentin Lake that has got him to do so many of these pretty substantial walking journeys?
Well, I think it is the serendipitous thing. I mean, people talk about, you know, there's two types of photography. There's sort of hunting, or there's fishing, if you like. So many professionals or commercial, certainly when I'm doing commercial shoot, I plan it. I consider the light angle, the time of day, the subject, the equipment. And then I know I'm going to coordinate a certain number of things for a certain time, and that's all very well. It's a reliable way to produce an image on time and on budget, but it's not a reliable way. In fact, I think it's the antithesis of spontaneous creativity or seeing something really fresh. Whereas if you're fishing more, you're allowing the chance to come your way. And for me, allowing chance to come your way is what happens when you're walking.
Yeah, I count myself as a bit of a creative bloke.
Yeah.
But I love going out for a walk, because I just find that everywhere I look, there's something that makes me want to observe it, look at it more closely, discover something more about it. Is that something similar for you, or is it the walking more meditative?
It's both. I think there's different levels. I think for kind of mental and physical health, you get benefits just after a few minutes. But I think there's something on a long distance walk that after a couple of days, there's a different kind of rhythm of, especially sleeping on the earth and the rhythm of the moon and the sun and the wind. And I'm sure it is meditative. And then things just reveal itself, and I can see things that I wouldn't see, absolutely wouldn't see on a short walk, and I definitely wouldn't see if I arrived somewhere by car or a vehicle, because it's too much of a shock. So you get more nuanced observations of things. So I feel more attuned to seeing things better. But I think it's also, it is a physical thing, maybe the blood in the brain or something. I literally feel more alert in a way that I find it hard to do that if I'm inside or not moving.
The other thing I was going to be a bit wicked about and say is, you know, when you look around, do you just see the crosshairs in your...
Well, I mean, photography is all about the framing. It's not really about the image. It's the edge of the that rectangle or square in what I use for my project. It's the edge is what defines the image. So, yes, I do. Absolutely, yeah. I always see through the composition. I think that's what... Yeah. I mean, it's what you're excluding is what makes a photograph, and almost the more that's excluded, the better and more pertinent it is.
So before you started these walks, although you've often been doing walks which have been linked to doing a photographic safaris almost.
Yeah.
So, but do you think that having done this kind of huge coastal walk that you've done, that the way you've approached either walking or photography has changed?
Absolutely, because I'm much, much less concerned if an image doesn't reveal itself immediately. If I get an image after 3 days, I think that's 3 days of effort moving all the time. I feel that's a good kind of success ratio. And at the beginning, I was too keen. I mean, you can't want these things too much. You have to allow it to happen. I think it's almost just about kind of, you know, to be a good writer, you sit down and you decide you're going to write from 9 till midday. It's not, you're not waiting for the muse. And I think walking is a similar thing, because it you're putting yourself, you're allowing luck to happen, because you're putting yourself into the world where amazing things happen. And not just creatively, it's also just about meeting people or learning things. It's just the luck tends to happen on a long walk.
So now, also, when you chose to do the perimeter, what kicked you off into that? Was that kind of midlife crisis?
No, not that.
What was the... this is a phenomenal...
There was a semi-health crisis in that I had meningitis, not the bad kind, but I was physically knocked sideways and I couldn't walk across the room without taking a rest. And I'd previously done kind of demanding long-distance hikes, like the kind of Cambrian Way, you know, takes over 40 mountains in Wales. It's kind of quite a demanding hike. There's no way I could do that. So I decided to choose something that was gentler near where I live. So I walked from the source of the Thames to London with the view that if I got tired off that ill again, I could just easily stop and get a bus home. And it was so really very, very slow and contemplative. I didn't pre-visualise what those images were going to be like. I just sort of went and what came my way I would respond to. And I did a very abstract series of photographs just of the water, so no real context. And each image was captioned with the distance from the source of the river. And it turned out to be quite poetic, and I felt really proud of it. So at the beginning it was the little reeds where you could put your foot on either side of the Thames. And then, say it's a ship lake, it was the reflection of the willows. And then right into London itself, there was a reflection of the Houses of Parliament on the water. And this sort of was recognisable, but kind of quite, to me, it was kind of interesting. They were all the same linear. It was like a road movie of photographs. And then after that, I did a walk from the Severn, from the source to the sea, which I also really enjoyed. And it's really difficult. If you, as a photographer, you find inspiration, you don't want to let that go. It's all very well creating an idea for a project that's sort of a result of some kind of brainstorming, because you think you need to do something that's a very different thing. If you're just gripped by something as being absolutely inspiring, and the coastal area at the end of the Severn is what happened. I just didn't want to stop. There were so many stories and interesting things overlaid on each other, and I felt the images I was producing was a more unique, at least how I saw it. It was a personal vision of a landscape that wasn't either cliched or like something I'd seen before. So I decided I wanted to dedicate a significant amount of time to this project, because it was inspiring me and I thought it had value, because I feel there's a lot of sentimentality about how people view and talk about the British landscape.
They were downhill walks, and then Coast of Britain is a sort of kind of up and down. Isn't
it? It's also kind of preposterous, isn't it? Because you end up where you started. So the idea, I love that, because the idea of sort of heroic elements of it, it's just completely removed because it's completely preposterous. It's kind of like you leave St. Paul's Tube and just get very, very lost and come back 5 years later after having gone around the country.
Yes, I was going to ask you. You always kept the sea on your left, did you?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Always. Yeah. That's clockwise. So that was because the south coast felt like a sort of history lesson of Britain that sort of prepared me for what was coming. And it's a lot logistically. It's a lot easier because there's buying food and things like that are easier. And then because 3/4 of the distance is the west coast. So from London to John O'Groats via the southwest coast path, Wales and northwest Scotland, that's 3/4 of the distance. So it felt it was doing the hardest bit first. And also you get the prevailing wind.
I was going to say, aren't you walking into the wind there?
You're walking into the wind, but then from a photographer's perspective, most of the day you're getting the sun is going to be in front of you. So what you're looking at ahead is illuminated. Whereas when you walk down from the north to south, you're walking into the sun. So generally, most of the pictures are behind you. So it was significantly more challenging to see a picture coming south. So it meant the majority of the journey was with where the sun where I wanted it, ahead of me.
I'm completely ill-equipped at the rest of times. You know,
but there was a massive, massive amount of planning. I mean, even like the food, I'd calculate to the exact calorie, and I'd send it to myself because I didn't want to waste the time kind of sourcing food on the walk, and I didn't want to eat things that didn't really sustain me, that were lighter, and kind of I optimized the kind of my stove system so it would only use 5 grams of fuel to boil half a litre so I could carry less fuel. So I did give an obsessive amount of thought to that, but that's partly because the camera gear was really heavy. You know, 5 kilograms is a big old boulder of glass to carry around all the time.
Your stamina must improve while you're
It does improve, but I mean, even when I was 15 and had really poor quality heavy gear, and even like with nutrition, I remember it was sort of everyone thought you just ate Mars bars all day, and I used to sort of just take 5 Mars bars, and it's just such a bad way to eat. But even if I was really kind of physically suffering, it was that sense of self-sufficiency and freedom that I found really magical to be able to, you know, you can stop where you want to stop and eat where you want to eat and sleep where you want to sleep. There's nothing better. I've always loved that. But to optimise that and to reduce the fatigue, physically I'd be capable of walking significantly longer, but I found that your creative thinking just vanishes. You know, the lateral thinking you need to see a good image, there's an optimum amount of energy to bring that out.
Did you walk this entire journey on your own, or did people accompany you for sections of it?
I was kind of hoping that people would. I got lots of emails, I got lots of close friends that said they would, but when it comes down to it, people just don't really turn up. You know, I love walking with friends. I go on trips with large groups of people and small groups of trip people, but I cannot produce any work. I mean, being a photographer, it's work. You're studying from dawn to dusk. I'm looking at the world, looking for an image. It's work. If I'm talking, I can't be doing that. So, and it has to be solitary. As Picasso said, you know, you have to be alone to produce. That is the source of creativity, is solitude. I believe I learned recently that it didn't used to be called loneliness. That's a kind of construct of sort of romantic novelists. It used to be called oneliness, which is this really beautiful term of sort of a spiritual connection of being alone. And that's certainly how I feel. Like people ask me, do you feel lonely? And almost never. I felt afraid and isolated in a storm in a tent where I felt vulnerable, but that's a different thing.
Before you started recording, you told us that you're now editing much of this work.
I mean, each day of walking, I've been timing it recently because I'm trying to figure out, just because I keep giving myself a deadline that I'm not able to finish because I've been too optimistic about how long it takes. But it takes around 10-12 hours of solid focused computer work to work on a single day's walk. So that takes me a couple of, you know, split over a couple of days. So I'm about 270 days through the editing process. So I've got another couple of hundred days to go, and I think that will take me two years. The whole project will be 8 years in total.
Yes, and you're going back to places that you walked 5 years ago or 6 years ago.
No, because I did it as I walked when it was easier. But as soon as I got to Scotland, it was so so difficult because most of it is pathless. And I had a split tendon, a shin splints. I was always sort of battling with hypothermia. It was so... It's all I thought about was how I was going to deal with the next meter or next leg. And often I wouldn't see anyone for a few days at a time. The only thing I was focusing on was physically doing it. I've just finished editing Noidart, which was my favourite part. Noidart is, yeah,
so what is
called the last great wilderness of Britain. So in the northwest Scotland, around Mallaig, next to the Skye, you've got the rough bounds. So you've got that sort of Ardnamurchan Peninsula, Moidart, and Noidart. And Noidart is the largest peninsula with the big Munros on it, like Blarvan. There's no road access at all. There's just one boat. There's one village on it, Inverie. So it's very inaccessible, but very, very, very beautiful because you have these large mountains going straight from the sea. And in terms of my little weird project, there's certainly no paths around much of the edge of it. So in order to sort of go as close as you can safely, it was more like mountaineering because you're going on the ridges of the mountains and then dropping down. When I got to Inverie, the locals were watching my head torch bobbing. This is March time, bobbing down the mountain, and they did charmingly say that they were watching out for me and watching out for my safety. But then I went into a little bit of a dead ground in with a lochan, and they said, "Oh, they got bored waiting, so they went to bed," and that was my Highland welcome.
Okay, now we're approaching this.
This is Bella's Nap, yeah. In lockdown, this is my solace. I'd often come here for sunset and sit on the top and fire up my stove. The weird thing for me is I had this sort of 5-year journey, and then I had to stop it for one lockdown, the first one, and then I just finished it before the second lockdown. So it was a very big shock to the system to be so free and to suddenly be kind of caged. So I would, once or twice a week, I'd come up, I'd hike up here and light my stove on the top and feel connected to the planet again.
I'm going to ask, are you an easy bloke to live with? I mean, you know, you have to... Does the stove get brought out at home with the two children and your partner? Is something going on there? Do you sleep in a tent in the front room?
It's funny you should say that, because that's my plan for Saturday. I'm going to go with my son in the garden. But I have indoctrinated them, so I'll, you know, generally as a family on Sunday, you know, 7 and 9-year-old, quite long walk, we'll do so 14, 16 kilometres. And yes, the stove does come out on that walk.
I'm just going to put you on the spot and say, I'm not sure whether my listeners actually would want your recommended walks. But what I usually do is I actually ask my interviewees, yeah, if they can suggest a couple of walks that, well, they'd recommend to others. So
I suppose on a macro scale, I'd say all the peninsulas around Britain are really magical. So like the Lynn Peninsula in Wales, or Ardnamurchan in Scotland, or even Kintyre, just where the roads bypass them, they always seem to be kind of wild and remote, and there's more history and archaeology in those places. The Wales Coast Path as a kind of 3-month epic was magical. I was, the only downside of the Welsh Coast Path is it wasn't longer because it's so varied, really well marked. It was a real pleasure to walk. And in terms of something shorter...
I was about to say, is there something shorter in your portfolio of suggested walk?
Probably not, really. I mean, but every Wednesday I go for a long walk around where I live here, and my classics would be what we're doing today, kind of Cleeve Hill to Winchcombe, or the Malvern Ridge, I love that, or going to Abergavenny and walking up Sugarloaf. Those are three favourites that I kind of repeat regularly.
And I just stopped you from when you were about to make a suggestion.
Because I loved being in Scotland, the freedom of it, and I was a bit blue about coming into the kind of barbed wire corridors that you get with all the access nonsense in England. So I was sort of feeling a bit anti coming back to England. But Northumbria was so beautiful, and Bamber Castle and Holy Island, and I walked along the Pilgrim's Path under the full moon, and I just fell in love with that whole area.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Quintin Lake. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded, and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.